Let me be very, very clear. There will be no, repeat, no mass deportations. Everything we do in DHS will be done legally and according to human rights and the legal justice system of the United States. All deportations will be according to our legal justice system.
It's not only not going to get better, it's going to get worse every day in the media. And here's why. Because every day in the Oval Office, he's going to continue to press his agenda. And as economic conditions get better, as more jobs get better, they're going to continue to fight. If you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, you are sadly mistaken.
You would think that maybe VCs don't have this problem, because all you're doing as a VC is you're evaluating new ideas, and so you should be open-minded on new ideas. But the thing is, like, you know, we fund, you know, maybe 1 in 100 of the new ideas that we see that are, like, legitimate, qualified teams. And so 99 out of 100 times we're saying no. And so the level of cynicism that you can build up when you say no all the time, you know, is very, creates this kind of mental fog of negativity around you that then when the one does walk in, you have to be able to kind of blink and say, okay, this might actually be the thing.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is February 24th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell and our Friday, last business day of the week. As we head into the weekend, TGIF, we have lots to talk about coming up in the second half of the program. We're going to be talking with Rick Sini, of faircompare.com. We've got some decent, some really good fares if you want to maybe escape Chicago for a weekend coming up. That'll be in our second segment today. Paul Nolte is here in the house as well, and we will bring him into the conversation in just a moment. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are off 50 points as we head to a weak opening on Wall Street later this morning. S&P, NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Around the globe, stock prices climbed to record highs for a third straight session yesterday, propelled by an oil rally after a surprise drop in U.S. crude inventories and comments from President Trump and his Treasury chief on plans for job creation and tax reform. The dollar was bogged down a day after minutes from the Federal Reserve's latest policy meeting shows the central bank is in no rush to raise interest rates. Treasury and Eurozone government bond yields declined as European Central Bank policymakers also signaled they were not getting carried away by signs that the Eurozone economy is gathering strength. In Europe this morning, most of the indices are down, all of them, as a matter of fact, with the FTSE leading the way off almost a full percent. The DAX is not far behind, and the CAC almost down a full percent this morning. In Asia, markets are generally lower as well, with the Nikkei off almost a half a percent. The big news from yesterday that we saw was the Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, gave his first full interview, one of the first full interviews, to CNBC, says we might not see tax reform until perhaps August. He'd like to see it pass before August. He also talked about some of the job creation efforts by the Trump administration, predicted that maybe 3% growth, GDP, might not happen until the end of 2018. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, you watched some of the stuff as I did. Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. Good morning,
Steve.
To,
glad to have you, and happy Friday to you.
Absolutely.
You saw Steven Mnuchin yesterday, 3% GDP by the end of next year. Even that seems like it's a tall order.
Well, you know, as we've talked about, anything that gets passed in the next 6 months, and really it's going to be a Herculean effort to get things passed by their timeline, which is August, the summer recess, it's going to be an aggressive timeline. But even if they get it passed by August, by the time it starts to work its way through the economy and you start to see results, it's generally a 6 to 12 month lag, so that puts you, you know, well into 2018, if not early 19, as some of the stuff starts to work through the system.
I saw a statistic yesterday, and I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe you know. It has been 80 years since the tax code has been changed in any significant way. Everybody talks about it all the time, but so to have it done by August, when you think about that, even seems even more far-fetched.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, going through the House will be generally much easier than the Senate. The Senate is where everything kind of gets bogged down just from a legislative perspective. And depending upon how radical they're going to be, there's going to be a lot of axes gored, and there's going to be a ton of activity around Washington with all the different legislators and interested parties pushing their own agendas. So it's going to be that's what I said. It's going to be a very big effort to really move the needle significantly on tax reform. The last, I don't know if it's 80 years, but certainly a lot of people point to some of the stuff that Reagan did as far as just messing with some of the tax code and tax rate. That may be what we wind up with here.
Or maybe some small portion of a bigger plan that is maybe the first step.
Something that we can get past and we can point to and say, yes, we got that accomplished.
From the GDP standpoint, give us a sense of that, because the prediction for this year GDP is what, 2.5%?
About, yeah, two. It's been running in the 2-2.5% range. And really, when you take a look at what the issues are around GDP, there is a speed limit to it. And part of that, the reason that we're not able to grow much faster, and some of the things that we've talked about in the past and we've looked at internally, is the fact that we're sitting on so much debt. So debt's kind of the wet blanket keeps a cover on really strong economic growth because I have to pay back debt. I can't use that extra cash to go out and build a new plant equipment and really get things going. I got to take that extra cash to pay down my obligations.
And the debt part of that is another big issue. If the infrastructure ideas and some of the other advancement ideas that the Trump administration has adds to the debt, that'll make that even more difficult.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why they're talking about inflation being a problem. And again, the Fed has not yet weighed in on it because they haven't seen what is going to be proposed. So it's hard for them to make any guesses on that.
I like your speed limit analogy there. That's good. I saw Diane Swonk of Mesro Financial yesterday said it would defy gravity to get to 3. So both of those seem about right.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones is now pushing toward 21,000, closing up 35 points yesterday at 20,810. The Standard & Poor's 500 was up fractionally. The NASDAQ lost 25 points to end the day at 5835. While Macy's reported disappointing results in its last quarter, another retailer, Nordstrom's, saw its sales and profits rise. The high-end department store credits better control of its inventory and robust sales at its off-price locations over the holidays. A self-driving car company founded by Google accuses a former top engineer of stealing pivotal technology. Waymo accuses Anthony Lewandowski of taking confidential files before he quit Google and selling them to Uber. And Coca-Cola says it supports the World Health Organization's latest guidelines for limited added sugar. The Atlanta-based beverage company is working to repair its image in public health circles as sales of bottled water and tea grow more quickly than sodas. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on, as we are every Friday, with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. He's a senior portfolio manager there. Paul, during the break, we were talking and looking at the big board, the stock market numbers. 20,000, maybe 21,000. You heard Jim Ryan say that. Is that maybe a possibility, or are you thinking a correction is coming?
Well, I think there's a correction is something that the market does habitually. It's not a big deal. It happens every 9 to 18 months. You get the 3 to 5% drops pretty regularly. The 10% usually happen every year and a half or so. It's been a while. So from a time perspective, we're due, but that doesn't mean it happens immediately.
20,735.36 is where it's at now. So you're thinking maybe a 10% correction over the course of time, that would take us back down to what, 19,000?
About 19,000 or so. And again, that might provide a reasonably good buying opportunity. And part of the reason why when we talked last week, you know, what to do in your portfolio, given the run that we've had in the stock market, it probably is not a bad time to take a little bit of money off the table on the stock side and move some of that money over to the bonds.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is there, because people always say, don't pay attention to the Dow, really. What should we be paying attention to?
You know, pay attention to your portfolio because the S&P doesn't care what your portfolio is doing, and it's not something that you're trying to beat. You're trying to get a rate of return that's going to allow you to get to retirement or stay in retirement. And some of that's at asset allocation. So if we look at a 50-50 portfolio between stocks and bonds, and stocks have gone up, call it 10%, that part of your portfolio is now 55,000. You've got 50,000 in bonds to get it back to 50-50. take half of those gains and move it back over to bonds. So you're taking from the best part of the portfolio and buying the part of the portfolio that hasn't done so well, because again, everything, you know, over time at least, doesn't go one direction.
Anything, speaking of portfolios, that you've seen over the last week that's concerning? I know we had some more earnings, some retail earnings especially. What out there is a concern of you?
You know, it's been an ongoing concern really for the last year for us, even though the markets are up significantly from a year ago level, is the valuations are still high. We're building in expectations, I think, that's going to be very difficult. We talked about GDP growth before. Earnings from corporations follow GDP. So if we're going to be struggling to get much above 2% GDP growth, it's going to be difficult for the S&P 500 to get 15% earnings growth, which is what's being baked in right now. So if those come in a little bit worse than expected, then I think we can see, again, talking about that correction, we could see the market come down here a little bit. So valuations are a big concern, and that's really more of a long-term concern than it is the next couple of weeks.
We got to see the minutes of the last Federal Reserve meeting, and it seems, at least from what is in there, that sooner than later is the interest rate hike coming, perhaps March. Is that the news from the minutes that you took away?
It is, and certainly in line with what we saw from the inflation numbers. And again, the economic data was a little bit better than expected recently. So there's a plenty of cover for the Fed to go ahead and raise rates. The fact that the market is up as much as it is, I think, is comforting to the Fed that they don't have to worry about raising rates while the market is falling 5 to 10%. So they have a window here, I think, where they can raise rates.
The thing that I thought was most interesting in terms of Fed news this week was this idea that President Trump may actually get to appoint a couple of Fed governors, a couple of Fed presidents, and maybe change, even though he's not going to get to replace Janet Yellen just yet, maybe work around her that way.
There's one that's retiring. Tarullo announced last week that he's going to retire. There's one seat that's open. So he's got two right now that he can appoint. Janet's term comes up next year. So he'll have that opportunity within, call it 12 to 14 months, to appoint three of the Federal Reserve governors.
And how would that change policy, monetary policy?
The answer to most financial questions is it depends.
Right.
It's going to depend on really what they wind up implementing. Is he going to go academic, which is where the Fed is right now? There's a lot of people from academia on the Fed. Or does he go a little bit more toward the business side and look at some of those people that have been running a company or something along those lines? And that will color the decisions by the Fed.
You talked earlier and also last week about this notion of rebalancing our portfolios. You mentioned a little bit of it just a minute ago, but tell us again how this really should happen.
You know, you can do it a couple different ways. One is, in what we do in our shop, we look at this obviously on a regular basis, daily, weekly, and within the different asset classes, so large cap, small cap, et cetera. But in a very broad sense, just between stocks and bonds, you want to take a look at it quarterly, maybe once a year, to make sure that one part of the portfolio doesn't get way out of line. So what will happen, let's say in the 1980s, 1990s, you had a huge stock run, much better than the bonds. And so your portfolio, when you got to 2000, was very heavily weighted towards stocks. And if you didn't rebalance it back to that, let's call it 50-50 mix, you wound up getting hurt more than you would have if you did not rebalance. So it's a way to buy a very cheap asset. The underperforming asset is what you're buying, and selling that asset that has done very well, because there is over time at least a reversion to the mean, and that's really what you're trying to take advantage of. And it's been called one of the only free lunches on Wall Street. Again, it forces you to buy the cheaper asset and selling the one that's done very well.
Later today, we're going to see the new home sales report for November. Existing sales this week, that report was really good. How is buying a home in the terms of our savings? Is it still a good bet to buy a home? Is that a nice retirement savings thing?
You know, I wouldn't look at it from the perspective of a retirement savings because you have to live somewhere.
Sure.
So, you know, the thought that this is going to be my retirement, I think, is a fallacy. You want to buy a place that you're going to be comfortable in, raise a family, do whatever you're going to do with, and be able to afford it, more importantly. So what we're finding now in the housing market is housing prices have actually picked up here and are up maybe 4 to 5% on a year-over-year basis. But what's interesting is it's outstripping wage growth. So the price of a house is getting a little bit further out of reach for the average home buyer. And we know from history about 60 to 63% of the population will own a home. The rest will rent. Somewhere. So
yeah, and right now rents are almost more expensive than a mortgage in some places.
Certainly. And New York City is the classic case.
That would be a scenario of you, and if you bought a home, you could use that extra money, put it into your retirement.
Exactly.
Big plans for this weekend?
It's going to be a quiet weekend after a lot of traveling over the last few months, chasing children around and swim meets and so on. So they're all done with their season, so we can put our feet up and enjoy the nice cool weather we're going to have this weekend. Yeah, maybe, a little snow.
Maybe a little snow, too. Okay, Paul, have a good weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Thank you. We'll see you then.
From ABC News Tech Trends, Google takes direct aim at Uber with a service that some are calling Hitchhiking 2.0. The Google-owned Waze navigation app has been testing a new feature in San Francisco and Tel Aviv that lets commuters pick up passengers for a fee.
Now they're expanding the program, and it's definitely something that Uber has to think about right now because Waze has 80 million users on a daily basis who are using their app. They might think this is a good idea for them as well.
ABC Chief Business and Technology Correspondent Rebecca Jarvis says the Waze app does offer a lower price right now, but there's one big difference with this service.
Waze points out this is a different service. This is commuters using their services, not professional drivers.
And the move comes at an opportune time.
The sexual harassment allegations, the Delete Uber campaign, this is certainly an opportunistic time for Google to use Waze to get bigger into this market.
But keep in mind that Google wins either way, since it invested heavily in Uber early on. With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program at 5:39. Glad to have you along on this Friday edition of The Opening Bell. JetBlue announced this past week that all domestic flights will soon have free Wi-Fi. The New York City-based airline started offering free gate-to-gate internet at the end of 2013. On one aircraft. Now it's expanded to its entire fleet, and you can bet the other airlines will soon follow. And those seat back screens may be going away too. Let's bring in Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow FairCompare at FairCompare on Twitter and at Rick Cini. Rick, let's talk first about this JetBlue situation, free Wi-Fi on all planes.
Yeah, no, I think this is an interesting thing. This sort of lays down the gauntlet. I think we're seeing this and also, you know, whether or not seatback TVs are going to be in vogue as this. And the question is, will this be reflected in their ticket prices or not? I think there's a lot of questions around it, but unbelievable marketing move by JetBlue to have free Wi-Fi. Now the problem is, what happens when all 130 passengers are trying to access it and they can only get 1 bit per second?
Yeah, that's going to be the question too, and also, you know, raises other questions about whether everybody's going to be on a device now and paying attention to anything else that's going on. But you mentioned the seat back of video screens may be going away if everybody catches on to this.
Yeah, now there have been a couple different things that have happened over the last 10 or 15 years. We saw a lot of aircraft orders with these seatback TVs over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. More recently, the new orders that are coming out for domestic aircraft specifically are not putting those seatback TVs in. I think there's been a change in thinking, at least on some of the airlines outside of JetBlue and Virgin America, who's merging in with Alaska, is that the weight of those devices, which can be up to 10% of the total aircraft, weight for to have them in each seat. And if I just as a small side story, I can remember back when they actually removed olives from salads to save weight on aircraft back in the 1980s. So a weight does make a difference when you have an aircraft in service for 25 years. And I think also consumers are saying we want to use our own devices. And if we don't have our devices with us, we want you to hand out, you know, tablets, Samsung or Apple tablets on the aircraft. And I think think from a marketing perspective, Samsung and Apple will be happy to have that happen.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. That way you don't have to travel with your devices if you don't want to, because, you know, those can be kind of a hassle. But let's talk a little bit more about how this works. I mean, how does an airplane that's flying 30, 40,000 feet in the sky get Wi-Fi?
Yeah, so you have sort of two different technologies. You have ground-based technologies and you have satellite-based technologies. We've seen sort of a switch where the speedier ones are coming from satellite in some cases. Gogo, which a lot of people are familiar with, is ground-based. They're doing some switching of technology. But the problem is that 130 people all expecting to, you know, binge-watch Breaking Bad on aircraft is way more than the bandwidth that they can actually do. So what they're going to do is put, I think what's going to end up happening is you're going to see devices up in the nose cone of these aircraft that are accepting those signals and also that have content from Netflix, Showtime, a variety of other services. I think that you will actually be able to get on the aircraft. Of course, some of that will be free. Some of it won't. It depends on what you're doing. But the one thing that probably will go away when they do that is access, you know, a couple months before to new releases. Because I think once they do that, one of the interesting things about having those seat back things in sort of a closed environment was movie companies were allowed some of those early releases out. I don't think you'll see that in the new world order.
So then am I hearing you right that this might be maybe a different version of Wi-Fi with compression technology perhaps, and not maybe being able to access some of the things you would normally do on the ground?
No, I think you'll have Wi-Fi service to some things on the ground, but you won't be able to stream movies from the ground, from quote-unquote the internet, I guess the ground sort of but essentially from the internet outside. But you will have access to things like HBO, Showtime, and their content that's actually sitting on the aircraft on disk drives on a device there so that you're not eating up bandwidth. I think that's the biggest problem is no matter what they do, you have 140 people all trying to, you know, stream a 3 or 4 gigabyte movie, it just doesn't work on an aircraft.
How do we look for this maybe in our ticket price? Is it hidden somewhere in that ticket price? And how quickly will all the other airlines maybe catch up to this?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. JetBlue doesn't have as big a footprint. You have 4 airlines that control 80% of traffic in American, United, Delta, and Southwest. Southwest, for example, does have some limited Wi-Fi access, for example, to things like Google, SkyMall, so does American Airlines. But essentially, it's very expensive to fly, and it's not very good service, I'll have to admit. The last 2 or 3 flights when I've purchased internet on an aircraft, I actually requested my money back because the service was so slow.
Rick, let's talk about the World Traveler Program. We've seen over the past couple of weeks with the immigration crackdown going on that people who've had this have still been pulled aside and questioned. We saw a high-profile case where a NASA employee was actually stopped and pulled off and actually had his NASA phone searched. What should travelers know about this?
Well, essentially, right now, there's a heightened level of security anywhere. So if you're going in and out of any type of country, especially the 7 countries that were named as part of the original ban that was stayed recently, you're going to get extra scrutiny. And, you know, actually, phones themselves are completely the security services have access to anybody that's traveling's phone. It's been around for a long time. It hasn't been one of the things you've heard a lot about, but essentially they can get into your phone or ask you to be in your phone. This is troublesome because if you decide not to, then the question is, what are they going to do with you? I mean, if you're a U.S. citizen, you're a trusted traveler, you have a green card, these are all specialty things. And to be honest, I don't think they should be able to have access to your phone if you encrypt it or not. They think they do, and that's going to be a big problem out there. Security is a big issue, and so is privacy. So I think this is one of those things where there's going to have to be some sort of legal issue decided, and that's ultimately going to be at the Supreme Court.
And so if you're one of these travelers that they demand to see your phone, what should you do?
You have to give it over. I mean, unless you want to stay in the pokey there at the airport for potentially overnight. Essentially, there's not much you can do at this point. So, look, I mean, if you don't give them your password, many of them will ask you to type in your password and whatnot. Therein lies, I think, the rub of all this, which is, just because they have your phone, if you have it locked, it's very difficult to get into. They can ask you to do that. And in theory, they could deny you entry back into the country. Now, if you're a U.S. citizen, a green card holder, all those things, they can't. can't deny you entry back in, but you couldn't be put in limbo. And I'm not sure what that limbo looks like. I'm not positive they actually have policy on that.
So let's talk about the Trusted Traveler Program. Is it something you'd recommend to folks?
Absolutely. I've been part of Global Entry and the Trusted Traveler Program forever. And the main reason to do that is to save yourself, and in many cases, ports of entry like Miami, New York. In Dallas, I've saved 3-4 hours of waiting in line and particular things by essentially coming in, you actually put your fingerprints down, and you're out in 5 or 10 minutes from the airport. It's a huge time saver. Now, you do have to give up some information. You do have to do an interview. It's just like TSA PreCheck. And actually, if you do the Trusted Traveler Program, you also get TSA PreCheck. It's $100 for 5 years, probably the best $100 I've spent. For anybody that travels more than 2 or 3 times a year, especially if they're going outside the country, it's a great program.
So get us out of town cheaply, Rick.
Yeah, no, I was looking actually for mid-April, late April's time frame. That's where people are actually shopping right now. And there's all sorts of good deals. The ones that I thought were the best looking through things was I've seen the Mexico beach destinations like Cancun and Cabo drop price by $50 to $60. Some of that is wall jitters and also hurricane jitters coming up as we head towards summer. You also have South Florida, almost every destination, Orlando, Fort Myers, Miami, under $170. Round trip. So those are good deals. San Juan running at $320 is also a good deal right now. And there's also some great deals to Europe right now. A lot of destinations, even nonstop destinations for late spring, early summer, under $800 round trip.
All right, Rick. Happy travels.
Hey, thanks.
Rick Cassini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cassini and at FareCompare and FareCompare.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures are off 70 points now, looking for a weaker open on Wall Street at 8:30 when the opening bell rings. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning. Silver up almost 1%. Crude oil trading down almost 0.5% in New York at 54.14 a barrel. Checking the Asian markets again after the close, the Nikkei looks to be down about 0.5%. We'll close down about 0.5%. 87 points there. Also in Hong Kong, markets lower almost by 0.5%. And the Asian Dow is off about 0.5%. And well, European markets generally lower. The DAX off almost 1% this morning, down 128 points. The CAC almost 1.5% now. And the FTSE in London off almost 0.5% as well in early trading. Other news that we've been following for you, new statistics show that China and France have overtaken the U.S. as Germany's largest trading partner. Germany's Federal Statistical Office has reported this morning that trade between the country and China in 2016 totaled some 170 billion euros. That's about $180 billion worth of goods. Imports and export trade with France was second at 167 billion. The agency reported that the U.S. fell from first to third place with about $170 billion in overall trade. It remained Germany's largest market for exports, however, with a total of about $100 billion. One of the other stories, too, is yesterday at the CPAC conference, the conservative congressional meeting that was being held, the political action conference in Maryland. The vice president, Mike Pence, was there telling Republicans gathered that now that the GOP is in charge of both the House and Senate, and the party has the president in the White House as well, one of the big things will remain on the agenda, repealing the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. The vice president telling the crowd,
President Trump's leadership, Obamacare is going to be replaced with something that actually works. Something that's built on freedom and individual responsibility.
And the vice president did not outline what that might be. There's still no firm plan in place to replace the Affordable Care Act. President Trump still hasn't issued that new immigration executive order we've been waiting on, stopping refugees from Middle East countries from arriving here. The White House says it is coming very soon, however.
When the president issued his first immigration order, now stopped by the courts, the White House said they had to act quickly to stop bad people from getting in. But the White House has spent the last few weeks no longer in a rush to get a new order out.
It's not a question of delaying, it's a question of getting it right.
White House spokesperson Sean Spicer says they will keep fighting the first court delay, but they're confident the new executive order will not face a challenge. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
The unseasonably warm weather here in Illinois over the past week has put a dent in maple syrup production in southern Illinois. The Southern Illinois newspaper reports temperatures have affected the amount of sap collected from trees in southern Illinois at the Touch of Nature Environmental Center in Makanda. The environmental experts there say sap was collected a couple of times, but the long warm spell has put a damper on those efforts. Temperatures need to be about 27 degrees overnight, 50 degrees during the day for optimal sap production. Temperatures have been in the 70s most days in southern Illinois, as they've been pushing here in northern Illinois as well. The sap is collected by drilling into trees, inserting a spout. Once buckets are full, the sap is boiled at about 219 degrees. The resulting syrup is then poured into canning jars. Touch of Nature holds its annual Maple Syrup Festival this weekend, which is why this is making the news. Now, on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, February 24th, 2017, only one major economic report due from the government today. The Commerce Department reports on new home sales for November. We'll also see a final reading of the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index for February, which will be published later on. A preliminary reading for February showed sentiment dropped, pulled down by Democratic supporters who are worried about the future. Lots of earnings coming today, including some retailers. JCPenney reports quarterly earnings, as does Foot Locker. U.S. Cellular also releases earnings today. Taxpayer-owned Royal Bank of Scotland has announced its fourth-quarter earnings today. And by the way, those numbers were not good. The Royal Bank of Scotland posted a fourth-quarter loss of 62%. Also on the agenda, the National Governors Association meets in Washington, D.C. through Monday. And the Girl Scouts of America will be out in your neighborhoods this weekend delivering cookies. The cookies have arrived. They are delicious as always. So be on the lookout for the Girl Scouts out delivering cookies this weekend.